This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The New York International Auto Show opens today, and automakers are showing off their new green cars. Nearly every automaker is showing a car that runs on alternative fuel. You got your gas-electric hybrids that you could drive out of the showroom tomorrow, or you have your concept cars powered by hydrogen fuel cells, natural gas, ethanol. GM is one automaker that is showcasing some of those concept cars, and joining me now to talk about them is Elizabeth Lowry, Vice President for Environment and Energy at General Motors in Detroit. Welcome to the program, Ms. Lowry.
Thank you, Ira.
Tell us about one of your cars, the Volt. Is that it's being touted as a plug-in car?
Sure. The Chevy Volt is a very exciting concept vehicle from General Motors, and it's a pure electric vehicle. It can go 40 miles range without a drop of gasoline, so it's created a lot of attention not only in Detroit when we introduced it, but also at the New York show.
So it has no gas engine in it?
Actually, it has a very small gas engine that can run on alternative fuels, ethanol or biodiesel, and that's used just to generate electricity, so it doesn't propel the vehicle at all. So it extends your range as you're going down the road after you do your 40 miles on pure electric.
How is that different than Toyota's Prius?
Well, the difference is this is purely electric, so that's what drives the wheels, just the electric power. And so the good thing is about this is you can plug it in at the end of the day. So after you go your 4 miles, you go home, you can use a regular 110-volt household plug and recharge your battery and start out the next day.
40 miles doesn't seem like such a long distance.
Well, actually, about 78% of the daily commutes here in the United States are about 40 miles. So that's how we designed this vehicle to be able to use as a commuter urban vehicle.
Now, you once made a car called the EV1 that you took off the market. Could we expect this to happen to your new Volt?
Actually, one of the things that we really did with the Volt is learn from all our experience of the EV1. So the engineers that have been working on EV1 are working on our hybrids and our fuel cells and the Chevy Volt. And so one of the things that customers didn't like about the EV1 was its limited range. Here we've created the range extender, so you have the small internal combustion engine that can recharge the batteries while you're driving. So it takes care of one of those limitations of the EV1.
So how soon before I can plunk down my cash and get a Volt?
Well, we're working real hard on the product development side. And then we also have to have the lithium-ion batteries. And so we have co-development agreements with battery manufacturers. And those batteries are important with respect to energy storage and making sure that they can take the issues with respect to constantly recharging by plugging in. So that work is ongoing now.
So the battery is really what's holding things back.
Yes, the battery is very important because lithium-ion has good energy storage, but we want to be able to have it for automotive applications. So there's still some work to be done on quality and reliability, safety, durability, all the important things for our customers.
Mm-hmm. And this car, as you say, could run on a variety of fuels for the engine.
Yes, absolutely. So it's typical of General Motors where we have a lot of flex fuel offerings. This vehicle can run on ethanol, biodiesel, regular gasoline, and the small engine that just recharges the battery. Mm-hmm. And it's a very important piece of the overall advanced technology portfolio from General Motors.
How many cars, how many Volts do you think you can, that's a sort of a phrase, how many Volts do you think you could sell?
Well,
how many would you make?
We want to make a lot of them and sell a lot of them, and that's what we're in the business to do, to bring out these technologies in large volume. And that's what we're doing in our alternative fuel vehicles, for example, where we have more than 2 million on the road today and 14 offerings this year. So we think E85 ethanol is right here today, an important part of the overall strategy.
Now, you've got another concept car that runs on pure ethanol, the Saab BioPower 100.
Yes.
Is that available to buy now?
That's also a concept vehicle.
Another concept car.
It's a concept car. It runs on E100. And what they did at Saab is put a concept vehicle that could take advantages of all the properties in ethanol and with their turbocharging really bring a concept vehicle that people are very excited to see at the New York show.
Do you think that it's time to get out of the concept business and put cars on the road? You have competitors that are already doing that.
Well, actually, we do have a lot on the road, mm-hmm. So I'm glad you asked that question. We're offering 4 hybrids this year. The Saturn View Green Line is on the road today, and we have a new model of the Saturn View Green Line. We'll also offer the Saturn Aura Green Line, in addition, the Chevy Malibu. And at the end of this year, they'll have the Chevy Tahoe and the GMC Yukon, which will have a hybrid system. So General Motors certainly has a broad portfolio of hybrid offerings as well.
And give us an idea of the miles per gallon you get with these cars.
Well, on the Saturn Aura, for example, it will be about 28 city, 35 highway. And that's certainly something that's important to people, fuel economy, but also at an affordable price. So that's around $23,000. So we think it's important that we offer hybrids in a full range of vehicles so that our customers will have a choice.
Mm-hmm. Not quite as high as the Honda or the Toyota.
Actually, because of the nature of the vehicle and the size of the vehicle, it's not as high. But certainly, for example, in the Saturn Vue Green Line, we'd like to talk about the affordability. You can go green without going broke in some of these offerings.
Oh, that's sort of hitting below the belt, isn't it?
Not at all. I think one of the things that's important is that customers have a full choice of products from all of our markets here, or providers here in the United States. And as I mentioned, we have the ethanol E85 flex fuel vehicles. We have hybrids on the road. We're working on the Chevy Volt concept, and we're also working very hard on hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. Mm. We'll have about 100 of those that will be in hands of customers to really see what the next generation fuel cell looks like and how you can get hydrogen in certain areas such as California, New York, and D.C. So I think that's a really important future technology as well.
You also unveiled 3 mini concept cars. Tell us
yes.
about those.
At the New York Auto Show, we wanted to see how the U.S. market would react to very small mini concepts. They're called Beat, Groove, and Trax. And obviously to get a lot of attention with respect to the design and fun nature of these minis. And we have actually a contest going on for people to choose which one they like the best and see how much interest there is in that size of vehicle here in the United States. So people can go to www.voteforchevrolet.com and express their opinions on those concept vehicles.
Do you think that these cars are going to stop the red ink coming out of Detroit these days?
Actually, we have a turnaround plan that we've been working on with some success to make sure we have products that are relevant in the market and that really are hitting the right piece. And we certainly plan on being successful not only with the concepts but all of the new entries that are coming from General Motors.
You still, yeah, and you've beefed up the big engine cars too. The Hummer is getting a big couple of bigger engines, right?
Yeah, actually in the New York Auto Show, in addition to the green vehicles that we're showing, there are performance vehicles that are people are very excited and interested in. So we do have the Hummer has an offering as well, and the Cadillac STS and CTS are shown on the floor, as well as products from Chevrolet such as HHR.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have a date when these concept cars will be available. We're waiting for the batteries on them, and we just have to wait then and hope we can get those someday.
Actually, what we're doing, especially with the Chevy Volt, is making sure that we're bringing people on the journey with us. So as we have our battery suppliers working on lithium-ion batteries, we're going to constantly update the public on what our progress is. Mm-hmm. We also have a fuel cell variant of the Chevy Volt, so really testing out the hydrogen and fuel cells, a concept as well, and make sure that we're continuing to keep people on that journey with us, because it really is the reinvention of the automobile.
Do you think that you folks at GM, you people who are really interested in making these alternative energy cars, I know you're vice president for the environment and energy, were you buoyed by the Supreme Court decision this week?
Actually, I think what's really important is that we're very focused on reducing carbon emissions. So the Supreme Court's decision obviously is very complex legal work that's going on the various agencies that were regulated at the federal, state, and local level. As a car manufacturer, our job is really to do everything we can to reduce those carbon emissions, and we'll obviously work through the regulatory process and see what makes sense from a technical and feasibility standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us.
Sure, I really appreciate it.
And good luck on your cars. We'd love to buy some American hybrid cars.
Yeah, we're doing a lot today. There's a lot of good fuel economy cars from General Motors as well. So you can go into the dealers today while we're working on the concepts.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much.
A good weekend.
Bye-bye.
We were talking with Elizabeth Lowry, Vice President for Environment and Energy at General Motors in Detroit. Our number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. If you'd like to talk about green cars, hybrid cars, what would you like to see? We're going to be talking about that for a good part of the rest of the hour here. We're going to be bringing on other people. We're going to look at maybe you have a diesel car, a clean biodiesel car. What's the future for that? Let me bring them on now. Sherry Bouchert is author of Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America, published by New Society Publishers. She's also co-founder and president of the San Francisco Electric Vehicle Association, and she joins us today from her office there. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Ira.
Hello there. Thank you for being with us today. Dennis Simonitis is the engineering editor at Road and Track magazine in Newport Beach, California. He joins us from his office there. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ira.
What did you think of after listening to the GM lady?
Well, with regard to everything in general?
Yes.
Well,
do you think that
she's very positive. Yeah. She has good reason to be positive. There's an awful lot of things going on, an awful lot of technology being developed, and very promising. I was interested to hear her view on the Supreme Court decision, where she's perfectly aware that GM, as well as all the other automakers, are already working hard on reducing carbon. And so, in a sense, it's maybe not even a plus or a minus to them. Mm-hmm. It's just something that's going to involve the courts.
Sherry Bauscher?
I am just appalled at the way that she described the Volt. It is not an all-electric car. An all-electric car was the EV1 car that they made that just had batteries and ran on electricity. An all-electric car is the RAV4 EV that Toyota made that I drive now. The Volt is a plug-in hybrid.
Yep.
It has electricity and batteries. And so to have them now saying, trying to describe this as an all-electric car that goes 40 miles, she didn't even mention that the total range, when you use both the electricity and the gasoline in the car, the total range is over 500 miles before you need to tank up or plug it in. So I don't know if they're intentionally trying to badmouth this car already and convince people it only goes 40 miles, or if she just didn't know what she was talking about. I'm shocked, really.
Oh, Sherry, let's tell them the full bad news, which is, remember, this is a concept car, but it's not actually 40-mile range. It has 28-mile range, because after 28 miles, the gasoline engine starts running to generate more charge for the battery. Which brings up an interesting point, Ira, about plug-ins. Very, very promising technology, something that could well be one of several technologies that really help us out on our way to fuel cells. Right now, I think I'd be interested to hear Sherry's view as well. Right now, with some battery limitations.
All right, we're going to have to take a short break. So hang on, we'll talk about the hybrid plug-ins. Anything you'd like to talk about Greek cars, stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about green car technology. Would you like to drive a green car? You like to drive a plug-in? What about biodiesel? There are new ultra-low sulfur biodiesel cars coming out. They're on the road already. They're going to get even cleaner. Would you drive one? We'll talk about that. Also, my guests are Sherry Bauscher, author of Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America, published by New Society Publishers. She's at KQED in San Francisco. She's also a co-founder and president of the San Francisco Electric Vehicle Association. We're also talking to Dennis DeSimonides. Simonides is an engineering editor at Road and Track magazine in Newport Beach, California. Dennis, sorry, I'll get your name right.
No, that's quite all right.
He joined us today by phone from his office there. Sherry, we have had people on the show who've already modified their Toyota Priuses to make them totally plug-in.
Right. I'm surprised to hear Dennis and others say that the batteries aren't good enough yet. When the car companies say this, what they're saying is lithium-ion batteries are too new for them to feel comfortable putting them into cars. But cars have been converted using lead-acid batteries. Priuses have been converted using nickel metal hydride. And I've been driving an all-electric car for 5 years now. I haven't been to a gas station in 5 years. I have a hard time swallowing the line that batteries aren't ready. So
Dennis?
It's not the case. They want to wait for newer batteries. It's just another stalling tactic, which, by the way, hydrogen was the last time that they fought the California regulations over having to make clean cars. You know, hydrogen may have potential in our society for heating buildings and other uses, but for cars, it makes no sense. And let me just give a very brief description why. A hydrogen fuel cell vehicle is an electric vehicle. Now, you can either take electricity and put it into batteries and run the car, or to run a hydrogen electric vehicle, you can take the electricity, apply it to water to extract the hydrogen, compress it, put it in a tank in the car, run it through a fuel cell to turn it back into electricity, and run the car. Now, which one sounds more efficient to you? It makes no sense to do all of that for a hydrogen fuel cell car when you can run an electric car much simpler and with one-fourth the power that you would have to expend for that.
Dennis Simonides, go ahead.
Well, it's always interesting to hear points of view that differ with the specialists, but what I can do is share the specialist point of view. With regard to nickel metal hydride batteries, they've been a tremendous success story in hybrids. Initially, you know, this is 7 years ago when the Prius showed up, when the Honda Insight showed up. The automakers were warranting them for 8 years, 80,000 miles, and I can't help but think they had their fingers crossed. They didn't know exactly what was going to happen. They got this kind of super longevity out of these batteries by treating the batteries very gently, by not stressing them chemically. It's not a soundbite, forgive me for the details here, but it's important. The batteries are not charged beyond about 70% capacity. They're not allowed to discharge much below 50.
That's in the hybrids, but that's not...
It lasts for the life of the car.
And Dennis, that's not true of the all-electrics.
What's critical about the plug-in, it's an excellent concept. But to work, you want to charge the battery more than 70%. You want to discharge it more than 50.
All right, let me get Sherry answer that.
I do that, and all of the, you know, you start the history with the hybrids. The hybrids came after the all-electric cars. All of the car companies made wonderful electric cars because California regulators forced them to. And then in 2003, they sued the state, watered down that law, and took back all the cars that they had leased and crushed them. But those cars had nickel metal hydride batteries. We charge to 100%. I routinely go down to near 0%, and those cars are lasting the life, those batteries are lasting the life of the car, 150,000 miles. So,
I don't know that any
you know,
have gone
it's,
150 yet, and besides, keep this in
they
mind.
They have. They
you
have.
You don't have to warranty them. The automakers do.
Are you saying you still have the original EV1?
No,
the EV1s were all crushed by General Motors. General Motors crushed all the EV1s, but Toyota built the RAV4 EV, and it has, you know, we saved hundreds of those. We saved some of the Ford Ranger trucks.
What's the mileage on your RAV, Jerry?
125 miles, and then I need to plug it in, which is
why people are... I'm sorry. I should say total mileage. What's the total mileage on it?
How many miles have you put on it?
How many miles have you put on it?
Mine has 52,000, but
Southern California Edison has a fleet of
RAVs that have gone, and some of those have gone well over 100,000 miles.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, we can argue back and forth about the all-electric cars. People are out there driving them and have proof. But the reason people now are talking about plug-in hybrids is because plug-in hybrids then no longer have that one limitation that people keep pointing to with electric cars, which is that in my car, after 125 miles, I do have to stop and plug it in. Mm. With a plug-in hybrid, you would run initially on electricity, but you don't have to even think about where you're going to plug in because you have that fuel tank as a backup, whether it's gasoline or ethanol or biodiesel, and you plug in when you get home.
Yep.
So
it's a very positive direction.
All right, let me get a call in from Don in Athens, Ohio. Hi, Don.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi there.
My question is, with, I guess, the overall concern is the environment and its impact on us, for one. I guess I'm not quite clear. The difference between a gas-powered or a diesel-powered vehicle and an electric vehicle, the electricity is derived from either coal-powered electric plants or nuclear-powered electric plants, which both have their own environmental impact. I live in southeastern Ohio, not too far from West Virginia, where they do mountaintop removal for coal. Plus, I know that the coal does have its own impact when burned into the environment, and again with the nuclear power plants and the disposal or storage of the spent nuclear material. So I guess my question is, can you explain to me how an electric vehicle has less impact than, say, a gasoline or even a diesel vehicle?
Sherry Bowser?
I'm so glad you asked that question. It's the one that I researched the most heavily for my book. because the reason I got into plug-in cars is we were fortunate enough to buy a home in the 1990s, and the first thing we did as environmentalists is put up solar panels. Once we were making electricity from the sun, we started thinking, well, gee, what else can we plug in? Now, I recognize that not everyone has solar panels yet, and not all of our electricity comes from wind and other renewable resources yet. So I wanted to be really sure I was doing the right thing. I gathered every study that I could find of what's called well-to-wheels emissions, because it's not fair just to look at what comes out of a car tailpipe. Electric cars have no tailpipe, no emissions. We win, you know. But what pollution is involved in making that power, whether it's electricity or gasoline? I mean, gasoline doesn't just magically appear out of nowhere. And I put all of the studies I could find up on my website, so you don't have to take my word for it, sherrybosher.com. They're all there for you to look at. And Argonne National Laboratory, the State of California Air Resources Board, lots of studies have looked at this issue. And even on today's national U.S. grid, which is more than 50% dirty, nasty coal, it is cleaner to drive on electricity than to drive on gasoline, because gasoline is just so darn polluting. So I feel very comfortable saying that both plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles are cleaner than not only just conventional cars, but hybrid electric cars.
Thank you, Don.
Much.
You're welcome. 1-800-998-2255. Talking with Sherry Bouchard, author of Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America. Also, Dennis Simonitis, who's engineering editor at Road and Track magazine. Dennis, give us some idea. We sort of allowed GM to get away with all the glitter today. But I'm sure that Toyota and other car makers have been showing off some green cars lately.
Well, actually, again, not to pick on poor Beth Lowry, but she implied that the natural gas cars are all things of the future. You can buy a Honda Civic natural gas car right now. You could have for more than a few years. So, in fact, natural gas is one alternative fuel that's out there. Like any fuel, it has advantages and disadvantages, but it is available. Other automakers, everyone's working on things like alternative fuels, on things like fuel cell cars. Some manufacturers, Toyota, Honda, to name two, are, I would say, further along than some others with regard, let's say, to fuel cell cars. But all the manufacturers are looking at it.
Mm-hmm. And I noted that for years, Volkswagen has been creating much cleaner burning diesel engines at getting over 40 miles a gallon.
Yeah, in fact, the whole diesel issue is an interesting one because it involves Europe versus the U.S. and available fuels here. For the longest time, we didn't have clean enough diesel fuel to use the European diesel cars. It had to do with where we sourced our diesel fuel. Now we do have, as you've noted, low sulfur diesel, and this may give a new life to the diesel car. Sherry brought up a good point about well-to-wheel efficiency. Diesels score quite differently in terms of where pollutants come from and where the sourcing comes from, but on a well-to-wheel basis, they're in the run as well. So it isn't that there's just one source of fuel or one kind of car that might keep us mobile for the future. It's a whole variety of them. In fact, I see a multi-fuel, multi-source mobility that's coming where electric cars are part of it. Yes, indeed. Range, they will be used in areas where perhaps a 150-mile drive someplace is not in the cards, but they'll be used in plenty of places where they make sense. Similarly for fuel cell cars, similarly for low carbon alternative fuels, things like cellulosic ethanol.
Dennis is right that we're going to need a bunch of fuels here. I mean, there is no one solution.
Well, certainly for the multi-car family, no one drives 150 miles every day.
Exactly.
You know, you're going shopping, you're commuting to your office, could be 10, 20 miles down the road, or even 50.
And that's one of the beauties of plug-in hybrids is that all of that local driving could be electric. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we think about biofuels and ethanol and even diesel or anything else, if you put it behind the electricity in a plug-in hybrid, you need a lot less of it. I mean, we'll never be able to make enough ethanol or biodiesel to run all of our 220 million vehicles. But in a plug-in hybrid, most of the time it would be electric. So that makes it much more feasible.
Harold, is it Parachute, Colorado?
Yes, it is.
Where is Parachute? Where is Parachute?
I'm a long ways from any gas station out here.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Bad joke.
Well, I'm right in line with your guest speakers, but I was involved in research and development in with the largest tractor manufacturing outfit in the world. I won't mention the name, but we can go there. And
Does it run like a deer?
Yeah, kind of that, pretty fast like that.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, even 10 years ago, when I left that firm and retired, we had done some research as engineers on what would happen if we could automatically change every car in the United States over to the gas-electric hybrid cars like we've got now. And guess what? I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into this thing. We decided that we would have actually more pollution in making the batteries and getting rid of the batteries than we would have right now from the gasoline engines. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not saying that we can't go to alternative fuels, but let's be careful. We could be having a tiger by the tail here.
Sherry, go ahead.
I'd be very interested in seeing that data and seeing your calculations, because I have seen no studies that lead me to believe that. So it's an interesting concept, but I've not seen anything to support that.
Yeah, I wonder if it's fairly old data in that, for example, if one's talking about lead-acid batteries, yes, reclamation of them has its problems. Nickel metal hydride, for example, there the big thing is the cost of nickel. People are certainly going to recycle nickel metal hydride batteries because the nickel is valuable. Mm. Lithium, when lithium comes, it's going to be even better.
Mm-hmm. Harold, is that why your company ran as slow as a caterpillar in working on this?
Yeah, that could be. But, you know, we did a lot of research on all different kinds of fuels. We ran diesel engines on peanut oil and every kind of oil you could think of. Mm. But the only problem that I see now with compressed natural gas is that we don't have the infrastructure to gas everybody up. We had engines running in the buses in large cities on compressed natural gas with no emissions to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
So
infrastructure.
That's going to be a good alternative. And would you believe right now I'm sitting in the middle of the biggest natural gas producing area in Colorado and probably in the state or in the United States?
Right, hang on. Let me time out to remind everybody that I'm Ira Flato, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Dennis Simonitis and Sherry Boschert about we're talking about plug-in cars and alternative energy. Harold, do you think that that's why they gave up on this giant company gave up on it, because they were going to have to throw the batteries away and be polluting?
No, I don't think that was it at all. This was a group of us engineers that had gotten together, and we decided that we wanted to find out what we thought would happen. Mm-hmm. Now, that isn't the reason why they gave up on that at all. They're doing so much research on emissions and so on and so forth. And then you've got to look at the cost of everything that you put into those engines, too. You know, there are things out there that we developed, but the cost was prohibitive. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have to look at it from all aspects. You're right. We're going to have to use a lot of alternative stuff, and we need to get rid of the dependency on oil.
All right. Harold, thank you for calling. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, I will. Thank you very much.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Sherry, any reaction to that, caller?
Yeah. You know, the theme that we all seem to agree on is we need lots of solutions, that we're going to need lots of ways out of our predicaments, mm-hmm. which is, you know, we're losing oil. The supply is diminishing. And to get that oil, we rely on countries that don't particularly like us.
Right.
And we need to do something about reducing our carbon load. You know, climate experts tell us that we have 10 years to drastically change the way we do things and reduce our carbon load if we're going to avoid the worst effects of global warming for our children and grandchildren. That means we have to move quickly. And so infrastructure that Harold mentioned is a key issue. You know, we don't have time to continue developing hydrogen fuel cell cars and spend billions and billions of dollars developing a hydrogen network. We have the infrastructure for plug-in hybrids right now. 110 electrical outlets are in every building in this country, every garage. It's already there. The cars, the technology is already here. You know, in the 1990s, Volvo, a lot of car companies developed plug-in hybrids in the 1990s. We didn't get them to buy because they were so busy fighting the mandate to build all electric cars. But for instance, Volvo developed a plug-in hybrid and they liked it well enough that they started building a fleet of them in Sweden. Well, Ford bought the company in 1998 and shut it down, telling their engineers they wanted everyone to concentrate on their core technology, which was SUVs. I'm happy to say that just yesterday, Ford joined Toyota and GM and Nissan in saying that they are now developing a plug-in hybrid.
All right,
hang on. We just need to look at what we can do now, because we have to get moving.
All right, we'll come back and talk lots more about hybrids and other alternative car fuels, so stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about alternative cars and solutions for getting off the, as the president likes to call it, our habit of oil or our addiction to oil. My guests are Sherry Bouchard, author of Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America, Dennis Simonides, engineering editor at Road and Track magazine in Newport Beach, California. Joining us now is a gentleman who's going to talk about an incentive. Now, let's say, you know, Americans love incentives to do things. And what if you wanted to make a car that gets 100 miles a gallon? Why don't we offer an incentive to be the first to do that? Well, one organization has come up with a way to jumpstart that process, and it's the XPRIZE Foundation. Remember the XPRIZE? Those are the folks who gave us the XPRIZE for getting into space, returning to space, privatizing of space. Well, there's now the Auto XPRIZE. It's a $10 million prize, a big prize that's going to go to the first team to build a super fuel-efficient car, one that can get 100 miles per gallon. The contest guidelines were announced this week at the New York International Auto Show. And joining me now to talk about the prize is John Shore, Senior Director of the Automotive X Prize in Pasadena, California. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Do you think you can spur creativity this way?
We believe we can.
I think you'll be just as successful as you were with the other X Prize.
We hope so. We've learned a lot from the Ansari Space X Prize. We've also launched a new prize in the genomics field. And we've taken that experience, applied it to the automotive industry, and we think we're ready to go in the development of this prize.
Do we need new technology? Do we need breakthroughs here?
We absolutely need some breakthroughs, but we believe that much of the technology for 100 mile per gallon equivalent fuel economy is available today if it were just put together in the right way.
Now, but we've seen these concept cars. You know, you have your college students putting these cars with solar panels, all kinds of stuff on it. Give us your criteria for what a winning car has to do.
Well, in fact, we are very much not interested in concept cars. The phrase we like to use is production-capable vehicles that are viable in the market, or at least we think will be viable in the market. And we're going to do that by judging the entrants on a number of criteria: safety, design features, ability to manufacture these cars in quantities of 10,000, so no unobtainable materials, and a business plan that shows that at least 10,000 of these cars could be sold and supported in the market today. And to do that and get 100 miles per gallon equivalent is much harder than to drive a solar racer across the Australian desert.
Right. Why that magic number of 100 miles per gallon?
Well, it's, first of all, there's kind of a magic, nice-sounding number. A number of people ask us, why not go for more? First of all, the general point is that we're not trying to set records for fuel efficiency. We're trying to encourage the development of numerous efficient vehicles that can succeed in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And there are two technical points that support this. The first is, when you get way beyond 100 miles per gallon, it sounds great, but in fact, you have diminishing returns with respect to fuel savings. 100 miles in a car that gets 50 miles per gallon costs you 2 gallons. You do it at 100 miles per gallon, it's 1 gallon, and you save a whole gallon. If you do it at 200 miles per gallon, you only save another 1/2 gallon. There's no way to save more than another gallon. So it sounds good to go much more than 100 miles per gallon, but you don't save a lot more fuel. Mm-hmm. Second point, if you design the car for significantly higher fuel economy, say 150, the fuel savings are not that great, and you're going to give up some stuff. In particular, the increased fuel economy will probably come at the expense of safety, convenience, comfort, and performance. And we are focused on production-capable vehicles that the market is likely to accept.
Do you think that the winner, and let's assume there is a winner, will have almost a free pass to one of the car companies?
Well, first of all, the winner might be one of the car companies. Mm-hmm. And as you say, the winner, if it's not one of the car companies, might be a new company that's trying to break into the market and can use the success in the Automotive X Prize to do that. But it might also be new technology and new designs that get bought up by existing car companies that would then put them into production. And lots of ways to succeed.
Yeah. And you don't care what kind of fuel it runs on?
Absolutely, we don't care. As one of your guests said, we're well aware that many, many alternatives are needed. There's no single solution. We've designed a fuel-independent, technology-neutral competition, which is why we do 100 miles per gallon equivalent. And what we mean by that is really quite simple. We look at how much energy goes into the car, we see how far the car goes, and we convert that to the energy content of gasoline. Mm-hmm. To say it differently, the fuel that's required to go 100 miles per gallon can have no more energy than 1 gallon of gasoline.
Mm-hmm. And have you actually laid out a test track?
Well, no. The test track is going to be the United States, actually. In 2009, we're going to have two long-distance stage races, sort of like the Tour de France. They'll be designed to reflect how people really use their cars, start, stop, traffic, hills, long distances, short distances, errands. In fact, we're using the Department of Transportation data to help design those courses. And we're going to ask these cars to run these courses and demonstrate 100 miles per gallon in driving that is the type of driving that real people do.
And, of course, you, as you say, you'll be eliminating cars that are not of production quality.
That's the plan, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And what if you come up with two cars?
You're welcome to come up with two cars and race two cars. You just have to enter them separately and qualify them separately.
And the car, it's open to anybody?
It's open to anybody, large companies, small companies, companies from other countries. We welcome all comers.
And you're announcing it as we speak?
Well, the prize is in development by the XPRIZE Foundation. The final decision to launch it has not been made. Lots of variables go into that, including whether or not we've got the rules right, which is why we've released them just a few days ago for public comment. We're in a 60-day public comment period. There's 30 pages of draft guidelines on our website at auto.xprize.org, and we're already getting a huge number of comments. We'll fold that in, we'll look at the revised rules, and then we'll make a decision to launch within a couple of months, we hope.
Now, I assume that the prize was $10 million because of the Ansari X Prize.
Yeah, a lot of people make that assumption. It's not the case. All we're saying today is that it's a multi-million dollar prize. It will probably be significantly more than the Ansari Space Prize, but we're not announcing that at this time.
Mm-hmm. And when do you have any idea when this might be kicking off? I mean, can you give us a window of months, years?
We expect, if everything goes right, to be launching this prize before the end of this year.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
And we'll look to see that who wins. John Shore is Senior Director of the Automotive X Prize in Pasadena, California. Let me bring back my other guests. Dennis Simonitis is Engineering Editor at Road and Track Magazine in Newport Beach, California. Sherry Bouchard is author of Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America, published by New Society Publishers. Let me ask you, Dennis, what do you think?
Yeah, I have a deal for Sherry. Sherry, let's develop a diesel series plug-in hybrid and just win. Simple as that.
Actually, it's already out there. There's a company that is now doing plug-in hybrid diesel school buses.
Yeah,
there's now several of them in the country.
The challenge, of course, is how they define the rules with regard to the route, also with regard to emissions. Maybe I didn't hear that, but does the car have to be clean?
One
would assume
yeah,
it
does. From reading the rules, if you go to the website, mm-hmm. you can read the rules.
And then they base that on a
well-to-wheels. Historical view on all this, and I must say it puzzles me. In 1982, I looked it up while he was chatting, I drove a Peugeot research vehicle from Detroit to Knoxville for a Knoxville World's Fair. This is 1982, mind, and I got 91 miles per gallon. Now, I did it in a very highly controlled test where we drove at precisely the speed that gave it best fuel economy, about 37 miles an hour. And if you want to do a long, tedious trip, do a nonstop drive from Detroit to Knoxville at 37 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Coming back, however, we came back on the interstate at you know, ambient speeds, and I got 75 miles per gallon. This was a lightweight That's one very important point, of course. Basically, a stripped Peugeot sedan, but it was a four-passenger sedan powered by a turbo-diesel engine, a very efficient turbo-diesel engine.
1-800-989-8255. Matthew in Chandler, Arizona.
How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree with you more on a diesel electric hybrid. My business here in Chandler is biodiesel, and we're actually ramping up with our city to go into full stage production here, starting off with a few thousand gallons and trying to ramp it up to tens of thousands per month. But tried to get a hold of you through the methanol discussion a couple weeks ago, got cut off. Anyways, biodiesel, in comparison to regular diesel number two, amazing reductions in soot, 50%, 50% reduction carbon dioxide, 90% reduction in mutagens and carcinogens. It's a great alternative, and it's easy to make.
Wait, all you have to do is find it.
Finding it is an issue, but there are some sustainable options. For example, restaurants that are currently paying, you know, X amount of money to have waste hauled off.
Right.
We've teamed up with them. You know, and then it's the next stage is, of course, you know, local source of fresh vegetable oil, and that has to be done with farmers.
Right.
So that's the next step for us.
All right. Thanks for calling. Good luck to you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Talking about alternative cars this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I have a diesel. I get 40 miles a gallon on it. I'd love to be able to find biodiesel without. I'm almost ready to put that changer in there.
And I'd love to see plug-in hybrid biodiesels on the road.
Yeah, my wife has a Prius. I have a diesel. We're doing as much as we can to get as much miles per gallon. And I would have bought a hybrid if it was available when I was buying my car. But they weren't available in those times. You know, it's they won't. In the first year they made the Prius, they only made like 20,000, 30,000 cars.
Yeah, they were testing the water, certainly. Yeah. You know, as I mentioned, they weren't completely certain, I don't believe, that they would sell, that they would hold together, that the batteries would last. This has been a real success story.
And hybrids now have been on the scene. Hybrids now have been on the scene for about 10 years, right? And there's, maybe a million of them on the road?
2000.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there's about a million or so on the road in the world.
Yeah.
So which just shows you how slowly new technology gets introduced. We need to move quickly if we're going to face the climate crisis and start building the cars that we're capable of building today. And that would include plug-in hybrids and all electrics. There's a group called pluginamerica.org that I encourage people to check out. They have the phone numbers of all the major car companies. And we encourage you to call them and tell them you're not going to buy a new car until it has a plug on it. No plug, no deal. This is totally doable.
Do that? Are basically all the hybrids?
It's not really doable because you have to warranty those cars. You have to put them in public hands and forget about them, but yet be liable for them for 10 years.
And, you know, there's different ways around that, Dennis. I mean, number one, I know we disagree on the nickel metal hydride, but they are lasting the life of the car. But let's say we're going with lithium because that's what they're all talking about. Well, a little company called Think, which used to be owned by Ford, which put out the electric car that first introduced me to the joys of driving on electricity, has been revived. And next year, they're going to start selling the Think again as an all-electric with 110-mile range. They're going to sell the car but lease the batteries. So if car companies are worried about how long these batteries will last, that's one way around it. The government could step in, too, and set aside $10 million to cover the first generation of plug-in hybrid batteries so that neither the car companies or the consumers have to worry about it.
How about
the
liability?
This is all doable, and it's a national imperative that we move quickly.
What liability is that, Dennis?
Lithium batteries have been in the news of late on a much smaller scale, but it's the same chemistry in laptop computers. Upscaling the lithium battery is one of the challenges that people are spending lots of money on.
But what's the liability problem I'm asking about?
I'm sorry?
The liability problem. What is the liability?
The liability of a battery exploding.
Dennis, do you know how many, the equivalent of how many sticks of dynamite are at a gallon of gasoline?
Oh, yes, I know.
How many?
Handling gasoline
how many?
For 100 years.
How many?
Become very good at it.
How many?
I have no idea.
Well, there are 14 sticks of dynamite in every gallon of gasoline, and you got 10 gallons, 20 gallons in your tank.
Oh, sure.
What's the liability on that?
We've been handling it for 100 years, fairly successfully, I might add.
So you think you could get past the liability question? If we can do that with gasoline, we should be able to do it with a battery.
We will get past it, of course, but we won't get past it next week. Or next month.
I interviewed the Department of Energy.
Look ahead 3, 4, or 5 years. Within 5 years, yes, we're going to have plug-in hybrids out there from the major manufacturers. I'm delighted to see them come.
Do you know why?
To say we can just sort of turn on a tap and bring out new complicated technology, I don't believe any business works that way. And particularly a big business like the automobile business. And by the way, Road and Track is not necessarily the best people to be up here defending the auto industry because we take our pot shots as well.
But you could have said the same thing in the 1970s during the first oil crisis when suddenly the Japanese cars were, proving that exactly what you said they couldn't do. They were coming out with smaller, fuel-efficient cars and taking over the industry.
Oh no! I'm all for them.
But they use the same kind of you're using the same kind of logic. All I'm saying is I heard this. So this is déjà vu.
The Japanese cars didn't come overnight. They had been building them. They had been building some very bad cars. Mm. They've been making them better. An American went over there. A guy named Deems Edward.
And whose technology is GM using to build their hybrid cars?
Oh, I'm not defending GM.
Using the Japanese Toyota technology.
And with Honda.
So I'm just saying history is repeating itself.
In what sense?
In that we're depending on foreign car makers to show us the way again.
Well, they're depending on the government, Ira. So, but I think it's going to be a joint effort of more than just one car maker. They're all developing these cars. It isn't the GM is ridiculously behind or ridiculously ahead. I'm inclined to believe they're a little behind.
Sherry, you get last word.
Well, that's true. I don't want to just dump on GM. It's all the car companies. But I have to say that, the government is playing a role here. One of the reasons the date that you hear from all the car companies for them to introduce plug-in hybrids or electric vehicles, they always talk around 2009, 2010, 2011. Well, you know what? The California Air Resources Board's zero-emission vehicle mandate, the one that brought us electric cars in the first place, it was watered down in 2003, but it wasn't killed. And it still has some requirements. And that's about when they're going to have to start doing something again to give us cleaner cars.
Right.
CARB this year is revising that mandate, and hopefully they'll come out with even stiffer laws and get these cars on the road.
Jerry Bouchard is author of Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America. Dennis Simonides is engineering editor at the Road and Track magazine in Newport Beach, California. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks very much.
You're
welcome. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Josh Rogerson and Manoli Weatherell in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kima Leski. There's Dinah taking us out. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flato in New York.
Wherever you go, Chevy service is best. Southward or north, near place or far, there's a Chevrolet dealer for your Chevrolet car.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. The Rockies way out west are calling you. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA, where fields of golden wheat pass in review. Whether traveling lighter with a load that's heavy, performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA and see.